Shri Mad Bhagavatam ki jai, Anantakoti Vaishnavinda ki jai, Shri Mad Bhagavatam ki jai, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Is this coming through? Is it loud enough? You can hear? Varun says he can't hear.
You cannot hear?
No.
Because I will hear something.
Okay.
It's old age.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome. Hare Krishna. Today we are reading from the third canto, chapter 7, Further Inquiries by Vidura, text 19. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo
bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Yat sevaya bhagavata.
Yat sevaya bhagavata.
Bhutastasya madhu dvisha. Ratiraso bhavettivra. Padayor vyasanardhanaha. Yat sevaya bhagavata.
Yat sevaya bhagavata.
Kuttastasya madhu dvisha. Ruttiraso bhavettivra.
Ruttiraso bhavettivra.
Padayor vyasanardhanaha. Yat sevaya bhagavata. Kutastasya madhu dvisha. Ratiraso bhavettivra. Padayor vyasanardhanaha. Yet,
to whom?
Sevaya,
Sevaya,
by service.
Bhagavata,
of the personality of Godhead. Kutastasya, of the unchangeable. Madhudvisha, the enemy of the Madhu, Asura. Ratirasa, attachment in different relationships. Bhavit develops. Divra, highly ecstatic. Badayo, of the feet. Vyasana, distresses. Ardhana, vanquishing. Translation, by serving the feet of the spiritual master, one is enabled to develop transcendental ecstasy in the service of the personality of Godhead, who is the unchangeable enemy of the Madhu demon, and whose service vanquishes one's material distresses. Please repeat, by serving the feet of the spiritual master, one is enabled to develop transcendental ecstasy in the service of the personality of Godhead, who is the unchangeable enemy of the Madhu demon, and whose service vanquishes one's material distresses. So this is still Vidura appreciating the wise answers given by Maitreya. He asked questions that were so, it said that Maitreya was shocked by the questions because they were so, it's like, why would Krishna allow the living entity to fall into Maya? Krishna's right there in the heart of the living entity. How does this come about? Living entities are always conscious. That's our nature, to be always conscious. How do we become unconscious? How do we fall into illusion? How does Krishna allow this to happen? And then, so it said, for a moment, Maitreya was like stunned by the question. And then he begins to answer, gives brilliant answers. Then Maitreya says, of course, this is wonderful. You've given good answers, as I expected. And then he kind of repeats back what's been said. Now he's going on saying, I'm so fortunate to have a guru. A previous verse, I'm obliged to you, because now I can understand that this material manifestation is without substance, although it appears real. I'm confident that by serving your feet, it will be possible for me to give up the false idea. And then today's verse, by serving the feet of the spiritual master, one is enabled. Okay, so last verse, you give up false ideas, you give up illusion. This verse, now the positive. By serving the feet of the spiritual master, one is enabled to develop transcendental ecstasy in the service of the personality of Godhead. Rati rasa. Prabhupada's going to bring it up in the purport. The purport's not very long at all. But there is a lot packed in there. It's very concentrated. Each sentence, it seems like we're just hippity-hopping down the bunny trail, but you could go down deep rabbit holes with every sentence. I know I say that at every class, but it's true. Prabhupada does it in every purport. It looks like you're just reading normal stuff, but you take it and like, oh, I see what he's getting at. And he's capable of opening up each one of these points and going so deep. Okay, so by serving the feet of the spiritual master, One is enabled to develop transcendental ecstasy in the service of the personality of Godhead. And we just sang the song a few minutes ago. Sri Guru Charana Padma Kevala Bhakti Sadma. So Kevala Bhakti means bhakti which is free from any tinge of anything but bhakti. You are serving Krishna only to please Krishna. Last night in our reading, a couple of times it came up in the purports, Prabhupada's describing pure devotional service, and he says, serving God without any wish of emolument. Emolument, we look that up, means expecting some payment in return for some work that's been performed. You're serving just to serve. That's Kevala Bhakti. Kevala means simply only this, excluding anything else, just bhakti. So Sri Guru Charana Padma, so the lotus feet of the spiritual master, Kevala Bhakti Sadma, are the only way by which we can attain pure devotional service. That's the same thing he's saying here. By serving the feet of the spiritual master, one is enabled to develop transcendental ecstasy in the service of the personality of Godhead. So we got feet, we got feelings, we got emotions, we're clearing up doubts. What are these feet? What's going on? Is this some magic kind of stuff that's just in feet? What about feet? What's going on here? And so many times, Prabhupada makes it very clear that in approaching a spiritual master, he said it several times already, Maharaj Parikshit meets Shukadev Goswami, he hears things from him, there's very clear instructions given, and in the purport, Prabhupada many times says, it is not, we don't hear of anything like him touching the disciple who feels an electric shock and he faints. And when the disciple wakes up, he sees the guru crying because he's lost all of his spiritual assets. Such fairy tales, such folk tales are not presented in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Clear information is given by the guru. The disciple accepts it with full consciousness. There's no passing out. He accepts information, absorbs it in the heart, takes it up. Prabhupada gives that in reference to Shukadeva Goswami instructing Maharaj Parikshit, then also Suta Goswami presenting to the sages in Naimisharanya. Nobody's passing out. There's no electric shocks. Then Prabhupada there also refers to Krishna and Arjuna. Krishna speaks the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada says, in full sense, nobody is going unconscious. It's just relevant information is being presented. But there is something to the service of the feet. Meanwhile, also, Prabhupada points out, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayat Yasu Vairagyam Yanam Chayad Ahaitakam. That simply by engaging in bhakti, one automatically develops knowledge. So that's mysterious. That's a little mystical. So both things are going on. it's very reasonable. Things are explained. We understand. But even if you don't understand, if you develop the service attitude, then we can understand things that have previously been unattainable to us. Vasudeva Bhagavati, same word that's given here. Yat sevaya Bhagavata, so by service to Bhagavata, and here Bhagavat means of the personality of Godhead, and that refers to the devotee. By serving the devotee of Bhagavan, who is Kutastasya, the unchangeable Madhudrisha, the enemy of Madhu. So we can get into that, but we'll read the purport first. Sorry, I just got carried away with the verse. OK. Okay, so in the verse, let's see, how many points are there? Serving the feet of the guru, one is enabled to develop transcendental ecstasy in the service of the personality of Godhead. Okay, service to the guru, you learn how to love Krishna, who is the unchangeable enemy of the Madhu demon, and whose service vanquishes one's material distresses. So two main points. Krishna loves his devotees, vanquishes their material distresses. He's the enemy of the Madhu demon. That's all like one topic. Purport. The association of a bona fide spiritual master, like the sage Maitreya, can be of absolute help in achieving transcendental attachment for the direct service of the Lord. The Lord is the enemy of the Madhu demon, or in other words, he is the enemy of the suffering of his pure devotee. The word rati rasa is significant in this verse. Service to the Lord is rendered in different transcendental mellows, relationships: neutral, active, friendly, parental, and nuptial. On the Veda base, it's, what does it say here? Still nuptial, okay. The Veda base, it said, forget if it was conjugal. A living entity in the liberated position of transcendental service to the Lord becomes attracted to one of the above mentioned mellows. And when one is engaged in transcendental loving service to the Lord, one's service attachment in the material world is automatically vanquished. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 2.59, rasavajam rasopyasya param drishtva nivartate. How many of you know this verse? Param drishtva nivartate. Anybody? Pran Govinda knows it. What a surprise. Okay, who else? One, two, Pundarik, three, anybody else? Oh, okay. It's a good one. It's really good.
If I heard the English translation, I might recognize it. Yes,
okay. The embodied, I'll try to remember, the embodied being restricted from sense enjoyment still feels attracted to sense enjoyment. The taste still remains. But by, how does it go? What's the current Gita translation? Carnivore, you want to?
Replace the lower taste with the higher.
Yeah, the higher taste, yeah. This is the higher taste verse.
Right.
But it remains. One cannot just escape from it.
Carnivore, you could just click on that and it'll come up. Let's see what the current translation is. Vishaya vinivartante niraharasya dehinam. Everyone together. Raso vajam raso pyasya param drishtva nivartate. Let's do it one more time. Vishaya vinivartante niraharasya dehinam. Raso vajam raso pyasya param drishtva nivartate. And the translation: though the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements, by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. Okay, the simple example is, if someone's addicted to smoking cigarettes, it's a really difficult habit to break. The taste for cigarette smoke remains for a long time. But as they become healthy, they get a higher taste. Like, wow, I can actually taste food now. I can breathe better. I have more endurance, and I feel healthier. So you get a higher taste when you give up a habit like smoking. And so here Prabhupada's saying, as we become attracted to one of the above-mentioned mellows, one is engaged in transcendental loving service to the Lord, one's service attachment in the material world is automatically vanquished. And then that verse that Kant Govinda was reading from this morning. Should we go into that? He already did. I'll go through it one more time. Bhakti pareshanu bhava viraktir anyatra chaisha eka. Bhakti pareshanu bhavo virakti anyatra chaisha trika eka kalaha. So three things happen when prapadyamanasya. Prapadyamanasya means when you take shelter under Krishna. And this is such an interesting concept. In other religions, people say you become a God-fearing person, like you're afraid of God. I'm going to follow the rules because I'm afraid of what's going to happen to me, what God will do to me if I don't follow. But for us, we have this idea of taking shelter under God. We go to different things for shelter. But to make this our habit, when I need something, I go to God for shelter. Prapadyamanasya. So when we go to Krishna, surrender to Krishna, take shelter under Krishna, then three things happen. Bhakti, we get devotion, and pareshanubhava means, anubhava means we get to see the Lord. We get darshan of Krishna. We feel Krishna's presence. Bhakti, pareshanu bhava, virakti anyatra. And we become detached from anything other than Krishna. So that would be, that's what relates to this verse, rasovarjam rasopyasya param drishtva nivartate. We see something higher, we don't want the lower things anymore. So three things happen. You get bhakti, you feel devotion. We get darshan, we get to see the Lord, and we get detachment from everything else. And then it says, trika eka kalaha. Eka, one, kala, at one time, three things happen. Just like, let's see, bhakti pareshanu bhava virakti anyatra chaisha trika eka kalaha prapadyamanasya yatha shnatha shus. So yatha, just as, when you eat, you get tushti, pushti, kshud apayonukhasam. So when you eat, you get tushti, which means happiness. And that is compared to bhakti. You feel devotion. When you eat, you feel happy. It's pleasant when you're hungry. Tushti, pushti, nourishment. And that's compared to getting the darshan of Krishna, bhakti pareshanu bhava. And anyatra chaisha, we become detached from, with each bite, we become detached from further eating as we become more and more full until we get to the point of, I don't need to eat anymore. And in the commentary on that verse, it said, that's the only defect in this comparison, because with bhakti, you never become, you're always hungry for more Krishna. So therefore, in the verse it says, anyatra, anyatra. We become detached from anything other than bhakti. All right, so back on this verse, last night I was talking with a friend who is a pastor at an Episcopal church. He gives the sermon sometimes. And I said, let's read this verse together. How would you take these points and work them into your sermon at your church? So we read the verse and he said, that would really be a challenge. But let's try this out. So the verse here again.
Why it would be a challenge?
Hmm?
Did you say why it would be a challenge?
Why is it a challenge?
For him.
Well, I mean, I'll read the verse again. Like, if you're a Christian, like, how would you explain these points? And so we had an interesting discussion on this. By serving, because I really like to open things up, make them universal. Someone who doesn't know about Krishna, doesn't even believe in Krishna, can take some of these points and like, oh yeah, that's reasonable, that makes sense. So the verse, today's verse, by serving the feet of the spiritual master, one is enabled to develop transcendental ecstasy in the service of the personality of Godhead, who is the unchangeable enemy of the Madhu demon, and whose service vanquishes one's material distresses. So first thing Father Matthew said was, all right, well, talking about guru, that would be Jesus. He's the guru for all the Christians. And serving his feet, well, what does that mean? Mostly he's talking about serving others. And then I asked him, well, what about that ceremony you just went to where you're washing each other's feet? That's something they do in the church. There's some ceremony they do, I think it's once a year they have that. And he said, yes, that's like something a servant would normally do to the master. But Jesus is all about flipping those things around. Whoever is lowest here will be highest there in the spiritual realm, and the lower you can go in your service, the more higher place you are in spiritual consideration. And I said, yeah, okay, well, what about other kinds of gurus? And then I told a story how I was at a college campus, and I found myself surrounded by these college students who were with the Jesus Club. I forget what the name of their club was, but they were looking at me with concern, like, you have this biblical name, you've been given this biblical name, Mark, why are you involved in this with these Bhagavad Gitas? And they looked really disappointed with me. So they asked, why did you get involved in this? And I thought, okay, well, why did you get involved with this? Because you met someone who has agape, spiritual love. That's the term that the Christians use for spiritual love, is agape. You met someone with that, and you were inspired by that, and thought, I want to be like this person. And so you listened to them, you took their advice, that person brought you in, and now, because you have these feelings, you want to share it with others. So I had a similar experience. God speaks through all kinds of people in all kinds of ways. I met someone who had those feelings, and in our tradition, we are taught to seek people who have more love for God than us. And we try to serve those people, and that's how our love will grow. There's always going to be someone who has more love than you do. And you, in your humility, you want to find those people and serve them. So that would be how I would present it if I was Father Matthew. And so we got pretty interested in that. Because this kind of cross, you know, taking ideas from this and putting it into that, it really expands understandings for everyone. This is a natural thing. Finding someone that has more love than you, serving their feet means being willing to do any kind of menial service for them. In some ashrams, like the ashram that Prabhupada grew up in, the Gaudiya Math, his spiritual master's institution, it is a privilege to be able to serve prasad to the other devotees. If you want to serve, if you go and visit their temple and you want to serve, they'll be polite about it. No, you just sit down. It's the most senior devotees that will serve the prasad to everyone. You have to have some credential if you're going to go around with the bucket, and not just anybody can do that. And this is our culture, this is our tradition. My wife was reading about the dancing white elephants in India, Giriraj Swami's book, and she said she was crying when she read how devotees stayed at this house in Bombay. This family, they gave up two, they had a three-story house. They gave up two stories of their house for the devotees to stay in. They cooked for them every day. The devotees were getting sick. They had diarrhea. Their clothes were just awful. And these people were washing their clothes every day. And after staying there for a month or so, when when the devotees were leaving, the family went to each devotee and bowed to them and gave them 50 rupees and said, thank you so much for blessing our house. And these were like new devotees that were just, they're pretty rough. They didn't know the culture. And Prabhupada said, this is the way a Vaishnava should be. This is our culture. And that's why he brought the devotees to India to see that kind of treatment. So this is service to the feet of the spiritual master, and that's the culture of India. Years ago, at a job I had, I was at a friend. He had an IT company. One of the employees from India was going to take his driving test, and the boss asked, could you drive with him, let him practice in your car? So we drove around, he practiced driving, and when we got back to the office, he got out and he said, now I'll offer some Guru Dakshin. And I was just expecting, a couple of dollars for gas or something. He gave me a $20 bill, he gave me another $20 bill, and I looked at him like, what are you doing? And he said, oh, is that, that's not enough? He gave me another one. And I said, no. He handed me another one. He said, no, if the guru isn't pleased, then the student will not learn the lesson. You take that, please take that. And he was adamant about it. And I thought, what are you talking about? I'm just helping you learn how to drive. But that's the culture that this man had grown up in. A culture of respecting teachers of all sort. Knowledge is such an important thing. So in a culture like that, people can grow, people can develop good qualities. And so that's what we're reading here. Vidura has respect, appreciation, and affection for his guru. Although they just met so briefly, the knowledge he's gotten, it's so valuable to him. So now there's one more thing I want to read about here. This Madhu Dvisha. This name Madhu Dvisha, Madhusudan. Who is Madhu? Well, who is the Madhu demon? We don't read about the Madhu demon in the Krishna book. Why does it come up so much? In the purport, Prabhupada said, the Lord is the enemy of the Madhu demon, or in other words, he is the enemy of the suffering of his pure devotee. So early on in the creation, Brahma is still pretty much alone. He's there meditating and creating things. Lord Vishnu is lying, sleeping, and then these two demons appear, Madhu and Kaitava. They're briefly mentioned in a few purports. Actually, I have a little reference here. Prabhupada writes, in the seventh canto, chapter 9, text 37, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his transcendental form is always ready to give protection to his devotees. As mentioned herein, the Lord in the form of Hayagriva killed two demons named Madhu and Kaitava when they attacked Lord Brahma. Modern demons think that there was no life in the beginning of creation, but from Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that the first living creature created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead was Lord Brahma, who is full of Vedic understanding. Unfortunately, those entrusted with distributing Vedic knowledge, such as the devotees engaged in spreading Krishna consciousness, may sometimes be attacked by demons, but they must rest assured that demonic attacks will not be able to harm them, for the Lord is always prepared to give them protection. So these two demons appeared and they took the Vedas from Brahma. They were more powerful than Brahma. They had received a benediction from Lakshmi that they would not be killed by anyone. They could only die by their own wish. Brahma is trying to get the Vedas back. He's in distress. He goes to Vishnu, who is sleeping. He's unable to wake him. Brahma prays to Yoga Nidra, who is an expansion of Lakshmi, and through her, he's able to wake up Lord Vishnu, who hears what's going on, and he says, all right, I'll take care of it. He incarnates as Hayagriva, the horse-headed incarnation of Vishnu, who goes to Madhu and Kaitava. And I'm not sure if there's a fight, but he's not able to kill them because they've gotten the benediction from Lakshmi. So he says, let's see. So he says to them, just as Goddess Lakshmi had given them a boon, they should give him one. After all, he told them, they were so powerful, they should show him the same courtesy that his feminine half, the embodied form of his mystic energy, had shown them. This is from an article written by Satyaraj, who was in Back to Godhead magazine several years ago. All right, so my wife had given you a boon. Can you please give me a boon? And so they said, all right, what boon do you want from us? We will give you anything you want. I want your death, the Lord replied. And so Hayagriva put an end to their menace once and for all. Okay, and then Sridhar Swami, the commentator on the Bhagavatam, he also says, here's another meaning for Madhu Dvisha. Madhu also means sweetness. False ego is as sweet as honey and resides in the heart of everyone, making one forget his own identity. It intoxicates everyone. He who destroys false ego with the torchlight of knowledge is called Madhusudana, or Madhudvisha, means the same thing. False ego is as sweet as honey for the living entity, conditioned soul, making one forget his own identity. It intoxicates everyone. So we have some time. Is there any questions? I could go on, but yes, Varuna.
I don't know where this thought came. It must be in the beginning of your class. There's that verse where the super soul is the witnessing bird, and then there's the jiva. They're on the same branch, and the super soul is witnessing what the jiva is doing, and it's kind of like neutral, but somehow it looks like the super soul can't hold back when the jiva is doing some nonsense. He has to, he can't hold back, although he's neutral, but he reminds the jiva soul, and that happens to us regularly. Like if we're doing something, the super soul reminds us, hey, do you really want to do this? Or, where is that verse? Is it what, 15:15 that, Hidhi Sanivishto Jnana Smutir Jnanam Apunam Cha. So he reminds us. So what if the jiva, so at that time the jiva is not, he thinks, well, I should do it or not. But let's say the jiva doesn't hear or doesn't want to take the super soul advice, then what happens?
That's what happens all the time. It's by stilling the mind. Let's see, Paramatma Samahara was just learning that verse. When the mind is calmed, then the super soul is reached. Jitatmana Prashantasya Paramatma Paramatma
Samihita.
Samihita. And what's the first line? Jitatmana.
Jitatmana
prashantaya paramatma samihita. So when the mind is calmed, then paramatma samihita, you achieve the super soul, you can hear the super soul. Our mind is always disturbed by rajas and tamas, passion and ignorance. When it becomes still, then we can hear the Paramatma. And that's what yoga is all about, stilling the mind, sitting calmly, breathing exercises. Chitta vritti nirodha yoga. How does that start? In the yoga sutras, the beginning of it says yoga means stilling the mind. Chitta vritti nirodha, the actions of the chitta, the consciousness, you still it, and then by that, then you begin to see the Paramatma or hear the Paramatma. So yes, we're always there. And then the verse you brought up, 15:15, I believe, the dual purpose verse, two things that Prabhupada always brings up in there. How does that start? What's the first word? Sarvasya chaham. Sarvasya chaham ridhisa nivishto. So sarva in all living beings, ridhisa nivishto, in the heart. Krishna is there, and from him come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So those three things. So that's one point. And then the second half is all about, I wrote the Vedas. The Vedas are for understanding me. So two big points in that verse. But from him comes, yeah, and he's there, Dwal Suparna, the two birds in the tree, Sakaya, how does that, Dwal Suparna? Sayuja Sakaya. So two birds in the branch in the tree. One bird's just watching, and he's just like, okay, it's up to you. He always gives the independence, waiting for us to turn and like, what do I do now? And that's what we're trying to do. And why is it so hard? That's what I keep asking. Why is this taking so long? We're all trying, and we're still doing dumb things. Krishna's just given us a chance. You sure you really want to do this? So we keep trying. Okay. But yeah, sometimes Paramatma does intervene, and here's something. If you're distributing books, you'll like this. That the meditation is, you go up to someone, Paramatma is in their heart, Paramatma is in your heart. You want this person to take a book, Paramatma in that person's heart wants you to take a book, Paramatma in your heart also. So it's three against one. The odds are in your favor. If you remember Krishna in his heart, your heart. So he can intervene. We can pray to Krishna, please tell this person. But Krishna knows what he's doing. He's been doing this for a long time, working with people, stubborn people like us. Yes?
In the beginning of your class, you were mentioning about Guru. Guru giving the power
or mercy to, and then he loses his. I don't know, in the West they are familiar with this story. I know where Prabhupada got this, I think. It's Ramakrishna and Vivekananda, their apostle. When Ramakrishna gave them, accepted Vivekananda as a disciple, and the next day he went. This is in the book called Kathamrita. Anyway, you don't know, you need to,
yeah,
read.
I've never read it. I've only heard
Prabhupada
about it.
Prabhupada mentioned this a few times. So you mentioned that it's coming from that story. The next day, Vivekananda is so jubilant, happy, joyful, and Ramakrishna was crying. So he went to see his guru, and in front of Allah, he said, "Gurudev, why you are crying?" He said, "All these years I accumulated the power, and now everything I gave it to you, now I am empty." Bhakti is not like this. That's why Prabhupada got this. It's true. It's a famous story.
Yep. I love how Prabhupada says, he uses the term folk tales. We don't see any such folk tales.
Yeah.
Here in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. Thank you. Yes? And yet, blessings of the Guru are there, but the Guru isn't depleted by giving blessings. Of course, Prabhupada, the Guru may take risks and go to discomfort. And then there's the verse spoken by Lord Shiva when he was drinking the poison. Tapyante lokatapani. Great souls take on trouble because other people are suffering. Do you know that one?
Tapyante lokatapani sadhavo prayaso jana.
Sadhavo prayaso jana.
Parama aradhanam tati.
Parama?
The greatest worship.
Aradhana, yeah. So sadhava prayasho jana. So prayasha means hard work.
Prayer.
Work, endeavor. So this is the hard work of the sadhu people. So they take on trouble, but the blessings are, the more blessings you give, it's like you're not being depleted.
I was just appreciating, I guess I never thought that Krishna is so, although he's neutral, the Paramatma is neutral, but like Varuna Prabhu was saying, that he almost can't hold himself. I was appreciating that point. It just shows how merciful he is. He's so lovable. And how in so many different ways, Varuna was asking whether, you know, what does the Paramatma do if we don't? Fact is that he just thinks about so many different ways. Okay, here I'll send you a devotee, or here I'll send you the holy name, or here I will send you some prasad. I mean, so many different ways he's trying to, he gets out of his neutral position and tries to give us Krishna. It's just amazing how Krishna is so not neutral in one sense.
And yet he's patient also.
Yeah.
A patient teacher. Sometimes when you're teaching the kid, you just want to say, look, it's right here, look at it. But you just have to wait for the student to grasp what's right there. Another thing, since you brought that up, it reminded me of something Mahara said. She was listening to lectures all day long, and she said, I finally got it. I know I've been hearing this for years and years, but it finally hit me. Prabhupada said, Krishna, that Krishna takes care of his devotees. Just like if you have children, you love all children, but your own children, you're going to take special care of them. If you have something to give them, give all the children. You want to make sure your children get something. Or if there's danger, you're going to run and save your own children first. No one will blame you for that. That's completely normal. And Krishna feels like that toward his devotees. So that's also brought up in this verse. The personality, Godhead, who is the unchangeable enemy of the Madhu demon and whose service vanquishes one's material distresses. And in the purport, Prabhupada says, the Lord is the enemy of the Madhu demon, or in other words, he is the enemy of the suffering of his pure devotee. He doesn't want to see his pure devotee suffering, unless there's some benefit for the devotee through that suffering, and so the devotee feels like, I'm being blessed by this suffering. Krishna doesn't want me to suffer. He's putting me here for this. Must be some reason. All right. Yeah. But he's, yeah, that's a good point. He's trying real hard to not jump in. Just like parents watching your kids fighting it out and like, should I intervene? No, they need to learn. They need to learn how to solve problems on their own. I can't solve everything for them. All right. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.